Welcome to the Non-Anxious Leader Podcast. I'm Jack Chitama, author, teacher, speaker, and coach. I focus on your spiritual, emotional, and physical well-being to help you be the best leader possible. Each episode explores research and practical tips so you can be a non-anxious presence personally and professionally. And now, here's the show. Welcome to episode 15 of the Non-Anxious Leader Podcast. I'm Jack Chitama, and today we're going to look at messy desks versus clean desks and how we can help the team that we're working with be its most productive. Former Google CEO Eric Schmidt arrived in his office in 2001 for his first day of work in that role. He was sharing it with the man he was replacing as CEO, Google co-founder Larry Page. Page was still working there, but they had hired Schmidt, a tech executive, to help take Google to the next level. What he saw was a mess, and so he called the facilities director and asked him to come in and clean up all the junk, and that's what he did. Well, the next day, Schmidt got an email from Larry Page that asks him, where did all my junk go? I want you to bring it back now. Fortunately, it hadn't made it to the dump at that point, and soon everything was returned to its former state. What Schmidt realized was that Page was one of these people who needed a messy desk to be creative, that the messiness of the office didn't actually hamper his creativity or his productivity, and probably enhanced it. This is carried forth in the Google culture, which encourages workers to decorate their own workspaces and also tolerates messy desks. So what is more productive, a messy desk or a clean desk? Well, at the other end of the spectrum are popular management approaches like Six Sigma and Lean management, which require clean desks at the end of the day to promote greater productivity and improve data security. In fact, some companies go so far in this clean desk approach that people must have their desk clean at the end of the day, and they're not allowed to have any personalized items, no pictures of friends or families or pets, no awards, and they want the desk to be lean and clean. So what works better? Well, the research is mixed. Researchers at the University of Minnesota found that people who worked in a clean room were more likely to eat healthy food and make charitable donations. So clean workspaces certainly have positive results. On the other hand, researchers found that people from messy workspaces were more likely to defy convention. So what they concluded, that this breaking free of convention would inspire fresh insights. They also concluded that clean rooms or clean workspaces provide cues to do what is expected of you. So it would help you to conform with the expectations of your employer. So this is probably why Lean or Six Sigma management approaches prefer having clean workspaces, because they want everybody to be in line with what the company is looking for. But there's more research. Researchers at the University of Michigan found that people perceive those with messy desks to be more neurotic, less agreeable, and more uncaring. So there is a downside to having a messy desk, which is that other people are going to perceive you in a more negative way, perhaps even thinking you are less confident. And a study at Harvard showed that people who have a clutter-free workspace are able to work for 7.5 minutes longer, presumably because clutter is distracting. It may not be a squirrel, but if you have a messy workspace and you happen to notice something in your pile, maybe it distracts you and you're not able to focus for as long a period of time. So the research is mixed on messy desk versus clean desk. But there's another study that really helps us to understand what might be going on. In 2010, two psychologists at the University of Exeter in the UK ran an office experiment. Alex Haslam and Craig Knight set up mock office spaces, and they recruited participants to work for 1 hour doing administrative tasks. What they wanted to see was the effect that the lean or clean office space had on productivity. It's based on this concept that clutter and personal objects cause errors and delays and distractions, and they wanted to see exactly what impact this clean desk, clean office space, lean approach to management had on people who actually worked in it. Haslam and Knight set up four different kinds of spaces. The first was the lean space. So all there was a desk, a chair, pencil, and paper. So this was the minimalist, this was the clean office space environment. The second was what they called enriched lean. So they just had a few decorations, some photographs of plants on the wall, and potted plants in the room. The third environment was called the empowered environment. It was the same as the enriched environment. It had the photographs and the plants, but participants were invited to rearrange the office as they wished. They could even remove things. They could make it lean if they wanted to. They got to choose how the office space was set up. And then the fourth was called the disempowered. And it started with the enriched office and then went to what we would think the empowered office would be. They were allowed to rearrange the office in any way they want. But then researchers came back and rearranged the office to match the original enriched setting. Now, as you can imagine, the third, the empowered office, was the most productive. The people in those offices were actually able to do the most work and felt the best about the work that they did. And so having a workspace with a few personal items or a few items to make it feel more homey, to make it feel more personal, and then having the ability to arrange it in the way they want actually made people more productive and feel more in control and feel better about the work that they do. Of course, the one that was hated the most was the disempowered. You know, to be told that you can rearrange your office the way you want, and then to have somebody come and tell you no and put it back. In fact, one participant said, "I wanted to hit you," when the researcher came in and rearranged the office. The lean office finished third out of four. So it wasn't as bad as the disempowered office, but people didn't like being in such a Spartan environment. One participant said, "It just felt like a show space with nothing out of place. You couldn't relax in it." Now, maybe companies want their employees to not be able to relax, but I would argue that being in an environment in which you feel comfortable and in which you feel in control is really important. Empowerment is taken to its extreme in something called the results-only work environment, or ROWE, R-O-W-E. This was founded by Jody Thompson and Callie Ressler when they were working at Best Buy, and ROWE focuses on accountability for results, not on hours worked. So the company says, here's what you are accountable for. You do it how you choose, where you choose, and when you choose. Now, Best Buy ultimately gave up the ROWE work environment in 2013, although some seem to think it was because of the bad economy. But there are other employers who are using it with great success. Gap, Yum Brands, Mojo Media. I'll put a link to Thompson's website in there about ROWE, and you can, if you're interested in finding out how companies are using this results-only work environment. But the idea here is that instead of telling people how they have to do things, how their workspace must be, when they have to work, how they should go about things, ROWE says, here's what we want you to do. You figure out how best to do it. You have the freedom to do it when you want and how you want and where you want, as long as you're getting the results that we need. And I think the point of ROWE, and really the point of the study that Haslam and Knight did on the workspaces, is nobody likes to be told what to do. We have a detached two-car garage here at our home, and it is the epitome of messy. We're talking about messy desks and clean desks. This is a messy garage. It's so messy that you can't fit one car in it, let alone two. And what happens is over time, it accumulates junk, and then every once in a while, I will go in and I'll throw stuff out and I'll reorganize, but then it gets messy. It's that idea of entropy that I mentioned in last week's episode, in episode 14. And if you've heard me speak before, you've heard me tell this story. It was about 10 years ago, and our garage was in that shape where you could hardly walk through it. And I was putzing around on a Saturday morning, and I said to myself, you know, I don't have anything on my schedule today. That's kind of unusual. Today's the day when I'm going to tackle the garage. I'm going to get to it. I'm going to toss stuff out. I'm going to reorganize. It's going to be great. And then my wife walked by, and she wasn't snarky or anything. She just said, you know, you need to clean out the garage. And that was it. I didn't want to do it because it was my idea. And as soon as she told me that I had to do it, I didn't want to do it anymore. And so I didn't. You probably know by now that I have issues. Anyway, I realized at that point that we don't like to be told what to do, even if it's the right thing. And so I think what I've learned from the research on messy desks and clean desks is we need to be willing to let people work in the way that works for them best, as long as they are getting the results. One of my favorite principles is effective leaders are able to say what they believe while giving others the freedom to disagree. And at the heart of this is self-differentiation, that ability to claim what we believe, our own goals and values, even in the midst of surrounding togetherness pressure. So we're able to know who we are and what we believe in. And because we're able to do that, we don't have to worry about whether others agree with this or not. Being self-differentiated means that we're focused on our own beliefs, values, and goals without needing others to agree with us. Now, this doesn't mean that we don't work with others. We don't compromise. We don't try to work as a team. But when we're behaving in self-differentiated ways, we're able to give others the freedom to control their own destiny. So whether it's a messy desk or a clean desk or long hours or short hours, we're not worried about people conforming to our own idea of what is right. What we are worried about is, are they getting the job done? Are they focused on what we're really trying to do as a team? One of the things I've learned over the years is that even though I might have the ability to tell somebody what to do, I don't need to do that. I can ask. And I think asking somebody shows respect, and it also gives them this freedom to disagree. So I might say, Ken, you have that report to me by Friday. Or would you be able to work on this now? And I'm not asking it in a way that, oh, you know, if they say no, I'm just going to unload on them. The idea is that if they really can't, they'll tell me. And what I think this does is this creates a culture in which people are willing to take responsibility for themselves. So if you are able to be a leader that says, okay, I need this, but you're also able to give somebody the freedom to really disagree with you and say, well, I know you need this, but I'm really working on something important. What that does is that enables people to feel like they have control over their own situation. And I believe that that enables them to work harder and have more commitment and more passion for what they do. Oftentimes, they are going to have a good reason why they can't do something for you. And sometimes you'll have to put your foot down. Sometimes, you know, you really need something and you'll have to say, well, I'm sorry, but I really need you to put down what you're doing to do this for me. But in most cases, what I've found in working with the same team for a few of them for 20 years, that if you ask, if you give them the freedom to disagree, they're going to do their best to do their best work. That's it for this episode. I will put links to some articles that I used as references for the research in the show notes. And as always, you can get more information at thenonanxiousleader.com. So until next time, thanks and goodbye. Thank you for listening. If you found this episode helpful, there are two things you can do to help others find this podcast. First, tap the subscribe button on your podcast app. And second, leave a review. I appreciate your help. Finally, you can find more resources as well as subscribe to my blog at thenonanxiousleader.com. Now, go be yourself.